you know, they never thought they'd own their home as an investment property, but now they have it. And so let's help them out and get through it. And over time, that's evolved to now we're trying to encourage people to get into this space because we believe in it so strongly that this is a way to financial freedom, building legacy for your family, creating wealth in the long run, real estate investing, and it can be easy.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me is Kevin Ortner with Renters Warehouse. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Todd.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on the show. Appreciate you taking time out of your day.
Of course.
And well, Kevin, you are CEO of Renters Warehouse, who Renters Warehouse, for the listeners that don't know who they are, which most people probably do, is specializes in residential rental property management. And you guys have pretty much, I'd say, changed that industry from little mom and pop management company and self-managing to a large management company, similar to what management companies in the large apartment industry are kind of like. So is that kind of describe Renters Warehouse a little bit, at least?
Yeah, it does a little bit. Wow. What a great intro and a great way to put the business we've built. I appreciate that, the kind words there, but yeah, so Renters Warehouse is a, third party residential property management company. We specialize really in single family homes, small multifamily, and, started as a local property manager about 10 years ago in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and have since grown to, we're in 42 markets. Some of those are franchise markets. Many of those are company-owned stores. Across the U.S., we manage just over 20,000 properties. So it's been quite the journey the last 10 years from really startup to we're the largest in the space with what we do.
Wow. You say 20. How many did you say?
20,000. Yeah.
20,000.
Yeah.
So I own and manage around, what is it, like 72-ish, okay, 1 to 4 families.
Yeah.
And then some other stuff. But
sure.
I know the difficulty of managing single families. So take us through kind of your, just a little bit of your systems and processes, what makes it work? Because 20,000 is amazing. And for you guys to do that all over the country, that is something else that you guys are making work. So take us through kind of the higher level. How do you make that work?
Sure. Well, kudos to you for managing 72 yourself, plus doing other things at the same time. I mean, 72 units is like a full-time job for somebody out there. So a good job with that. But for us, you know, it really comes down to systems, processes, and having the right people, right? In order to scale and grow this business, especially in the single family space, it just takes having consistent processes, some technology that we've been building ourselves in-house or leveraging a lot of the new technology coming into the industry, and then, of course, having fantastic people to execute on those processes. Because at the end of the day, it's a lot of our things are repeatable that we can do, from how we're collecting rent or courting maintenance and repairs, but also in this industry of property management, when you think you've seen it all, you absolutely have not seen it all. And there's new challenges and things to solve every day. And so having a great team put together is that. But the last, you know, many years, is that's what we've been trying to do. We started franchising our business in 2011. And by franchising the company, it really made us and forced us to look at what are the processes we're doing to make ourselves successful today, and get those on paper, and how do we teach people those and really push those out. So really having those processes there. This is a really low margin business. And so you have to be efficient when doing it and leverage technology when you can.
Yeah. You say really low margin. I know you guys don't charge exorbitant fees. I don't know the exact fee structure,
sure.
But you guys aren't overcharging for your services. So you've got to be extremely efficient with what you're doing, I'd imagine.
Yeah. You know, it depends on the market. So just a quick look at our pricing for those interested, but we're anywhere between $89 and $99 a month, a flat fee for property management per door. So we're not a percentage of the rent. One of the things we did to try and change the industry or how people look at property managers and really be aligned with our clients there. And then we have a leasing commission on top of it. But so small margins, and it comes down to efficiency and trying to get to scale and really do this at a large business. It was harder to make money than this business, frankly, when we were smaller. And now, of course, with volume, you know, we can grow a really nice business from it and hopefully continue to grow here for years to come.
Yeah, cool. Well, Kevin, let's take it back a little bit and talk. I'd like to talk a little bit about you and kind of what your background is and how you came into Renters Warehouse and sure. Becoming the CEO of Renters Warehouse.
Yeah. So interesting story. I have an unconventional path to finding my way to running a business like this. And in previous life, I was actually a corporate pilot. So corporate jets around the country for about 6 years after college. Early on in high school, I actually got my pilot's license and never thought I would go down that road of being a professional pilot. Just did it for fun. And when I got to college, I live in Minnesota. I was born and raised in Minnesota. I went to Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona for college, and got roomed in my dorm with a guy in the flight program there. And I thought, God, what better than do fly around all day long? So that sounds good. I'm going to do that. So I ended up getting a degree in aviation management, which is essentially a business degree with an emphasis on the aviation industry, which turned out to be a great decision for me looking back, because you could go two roads. You could get a degree to essentially be a pilot. It was a flight degree. Or you could get this aviation management degree, which was a business degree in the aviation world. Either one, you could essentially become a professional pilot. But option two, the road I took, I think, broadened my horizons for when I got out of the industry. So I did that for a long time. With that job, though, I had a lot of extra time on my hands. So I'd work for a week and have a week off, work for a week and have a week off. Or at another job, it was very kind of sporadic when I was on the road flying as well. I've always been an entrepreneur at heart, don't like sitting still, idle time. So during that time of flying, I was buying rental properties. I got into real estate, got my real estate license, was in the mortgage industry for a brief time. I eventually found my way to property management. I thought it was a great opportunity to grow a business with recurring revenue and residual income streams. So while I was still a pilot, I started the Renters Warehouse office in Phoenix, Arizona in about 2009. And shortly thereafter, got laid off from my flying job in the recession and the real estate downturn. And I got into this full time, and that was about 10 years ago.
Wow. So you had started Renters Warehouse, and then you got laid off.
Correct, yeah. So
Perfect.
I got laid off, had a new business, no income, and it was time to put your money where your mouth is, so to speak, and make it work.
Yeah. So you said, I gotta make this thing happen, or otherwise I'm going to starve.
Yeah.
Funny. Okay. So 2009 is that's officially when Renters Warehouse started, or 2009?
I came into the business in 2008. Okay. Our original founder of the business started it here in Minneapolis in 2007. So okay. He started as a local property manager here in Minneapolis, where we're based today.
Sure.
And I joined up with him in 2008, about 9 months after he opened here, to essentially see if we could make a franchise model work in this business. And I opened the first location outside of Minnesota in Phoenix. And then shortly thereafter, I actually moved back to Minneapolis to help him grow and run the corporate office. And that's what I've been doing for the last 9 years or so.
So what percentage of Renters Warehouse is corporate owned versus franchise?
Yeah, so we are now probably about 65% corporate owned offices and 35% or so franchise offices. The math on that is we have 25 corporate locations around the country and 16, I believe, franchise offices left. Okay. So about 42 markets total. That's kind of the breakup of, I guess, 17 franchise locations. That's the break of what it looks like. And early on in 2011, when we started selling franchises, that was our growth strategy. A couple broke entrepreneurs trying to find a way to expand the business across the country. And franchising was a capital efficient way to do that.
Sure.
So we sold franchises from 2011 through 2015. We sold about 28 offices. And in late 2015, we sold a majority stake of the business to a private equity group to bring in growth capital into the business and switch from a franchising model to a corporate expansion model. And so over the last 2 years, that's where our focus has been, is on expanding our corporate footprint, making our business a little more efficient, centralizing a lot of the back-end services we do. And so we've gone from one corporate location to 25 here in the last 2 years.
Oh, wow. That was going to be my next question. How do you decide if you franchise or if you keep it in-house? And so it sounds like now you guys are pretty much keeping it in-house or
building
the franchise.
Right. Early on, it was really a financial decision for us. We wanted to bring on great entrepreneurs that wanted to help us grow our brand and our business. And that was very successful for us for about a four-year run. Once we brought in some growth capital into the business, we had the capital to expand on our own. That's really what made that switch for us and that flip from a franchise model to corporate expansion. And we're exclusively focused on growing now our business through corporate expansion, company-owned stores, rather than franchising.
Okay. Well, sounds great. So what would you give our listeners advice on how do you run a business successfully? What's been some key areas of your success?
Man, that's a big question, right?
Yeah,
there's a lot of things you can do. You know, if I think I had to try and nail it down to one or two things, that really attributes to our success. Again, you heard me earlier talk about the people in the organization. You hear this a lot. It's almost kind of cliche in books you read things, but you know, your people are really important. But I think besides just bringing on great people to help you grow and run your business, it's about how you align them to the common vision of the business and also how you communicate that. So what I mean by that, I think there's nothing more powerful than an aligned team. So as a founder of a business or a CEO of a business or an executive, there's obviously a vision for the organization. You have a vision for that company, or if you're a department president, you've got a vision for how you're going to take your department and help propel the business. Being able to cascade that vision and align your team to that vision, I think, is hugely important, and spending a lot of time doing that, which comes to really, I think, the second piece of advice I'd give on running a successful organization, and that's communication and how we communicate with our team. And something I think I used to take for granted a bit, coming from, again, I was with this organization when we had three people, right? And now we have 300, some across the country. And so how you communicate has to evolve as your company grows and scales. And I think something I didn't spend enough time on for a couple of years, and something that now I spend a lot of time focusing on, is how are we communicating with our team from top to bottom and bottom to top? across the country, and what's the message we want to get out there, making sure that it's bringing everybody together and coalescing around what the purpose of the business is. And if you can do those two things successfully, align your team around the vision, I think, and communicate that vision, and also just communicate what's happening in the organization to your team, all the other problems you're going to run into can be, pushed through because everyone understands why we're doing it and how we're doing it, and can kind of rally around a common purpose. So those two things, aligning your team, communicating properly, I think are probably two of the biggest things you can do.
Awesome. So, I mean, what you guys have done is, very impressive to me, because I think you guys have to be by far the largest single family property manager in the country. Is that accurate?
Yeah, correct. Yep.
Okay. So with being that, really what you guys are doing is quite frankly, fairly simple, but it's never been done before, which is extremely impressive. I mean, so you take something that's, it's simple, but it's the difficulty of where you guys are at with your businesses. It's a simple model, but it's hard to replicate and hard to take everywhere, and then hard to grab the market share that you have grabbed, because it's different from an apartment property manager or a commercial property manager, where you've got a company that you're going after. You guys aren't going after the property owner that has 10,000 units. You guys are going after the property owner that has one property,
right. Maybe
some investors that have 10, 15, 20, but I mean, I know I hear your advertising, and you're going after a lot of people that they own their house right now. They want to move, but they either can't sell, or they go, you know what? Renting sounds like a pretty good deal. We could make a couple $100 a month and keep our house. And that's kind of, it seems like a lot of your marketing has been after that and building that. Why was that the decision to go that route versus like a big apartment building?
A couple of reasons. I think it became clearer as we moved on throughout the business, but early on it was, I don't want to say accidental, but it was the circumstances of the market. So when our founder first started the business in 2007, with the height of the real estate, the last real estate kind of bubble, so to speak, right? And there were a lot of people coming in and investing in properties. He was helping them purchase those homes. And they're always turning to him and say, hey, can you help me lease it? Can you help me manage it? We don't know a good manager. So it was almost accidental, right? Stumbled into it a bit. And then as we started growing a bigger business, the real estate market crashed. People couldn't sell their home, foreclosures, short sales, the whole nine yards. And so how we scaled our business was we really helped those people out. So our early advertising and marketing was, if you can't sell your home or lose too much money if you did, call Renters Warehouse. We'll show you how to rent it out and hang on to it and sell it later, right? And that brought in thousands of what we called accidental landlords at the time, or unintentional landlords.
Sure.
That, they never thought they'd own their home as an investment property, but now they have it. And so let's help them out and get through it. And over time, that's evolved to now we're trying to encourage people to get into this space, because we believe in it so strongly that this is a way to financial freedom, building legacy for your family, creating wealth in the long run, real estate investing, and it can be easy. It sounds daunting for people. It's confusing. It can be hard to get into. We're trying to pull the curtain back a little bit and show that it's not, there's not a lot of strings to be pulled. It's fairly simple if you partner with the right people. So our message has evolved over time. Obviously, the market's changed, so we've had to evolve our message. But we believe more than ever in the ability to build wealth through real estate. In fact, last year in May, I released a book called Rent Estate Revolution, which we call long-term real estate rent estate. It's kind of our pun on real estate, right? Rent Estate Revolution, and it goes through the reason why now is a great time to buy, and then how to buy, how to operate, how to finance your portfolio and continue to grow it. And it's about getting people who aren't yet in this space into this space. And so that's why we focused on that retail piece. I think there's a common cause we can rally behind, helping everyday Americans, ordinary folks, get into this asset class and hang on to something over the long haul that could be game-changing for them when it comes to retirement. And then one other piece of that real quick that we discovered later was how big the opportunity is for the retail owner of the space. There's about 22 million single-family homes for rent across the country. 22 million.
Wow.
A ton. And 85% of those are owned by those who own less than five doors.
Yeah.
So unlike the apartment space where so much of it is institutionalized, there's a very small percentage of the single family homes market institutionalized and a huge portion that's still retail owned by those that own one to five doors. So the opportunity is massive. We think we can grow it. And we're on a mission to bring more people into this to really understand how they can change their life in the long term through investing in this asset class. So long answer, but I'm passionate about it, right? I'm passionate about bringing people in here, helping them out, making it easy and less scary to be investing in real estate.
Well, that's awesome. I agree exactly with what you said there. I think you hit on the head there, but a lot of people, they kind of get it. And quite frankly, some people don't. So reading your book is definitely a good thing. Because once you do get it, it still is like, okay, how do I make this thing work? I got a full-time job. I got kids. I got, we're running from one end of the city to the other, or I travel a lot whatever. Just life gets in the way. And so by teaming up with a property management company like you guys who can navigate, what are the city inspections? Because like in Minneapolis, you have to apply for a rental license. You can't just rent your house out.
Right.
You have rental inspections. You have to know what violations your house could have and how to fix that. And so a company like yours is going to go through that house, I'm assuming, and make sure that property owner understands what needs to be done and can help navigate all the problems.
Yeah. I think especially as people are first getting in to the game and trying to grow their portfolio, I know a lot of investors who say, hey, I'm going to buy my first house that I want to rent, get a tenant, put them in there, and I want to do it. I want to be hands-on. And frankly, I think that's great. I appreciate that people want to understand what goes into it. And learn more about the industry and become more astute investors because of that. Frankly, it makes my job easier in the long run because as we have problems later, they've been there. They understand kind of that these things happen, right? But if you want to truly scale your portfolio, go from one house to two to five to 10 and really create a fantastic financial situation for you and your family, some people can do it on their own. But frankly, it's not really passive income if you have to be putting a lot of your active hours into it, right? Most of our clients, like most of America, have full-time jobs. They're working 40, 50 hours a week. To your point, they've got kids. They're going to their sporting events. They're coaching soccer. They're doing their thing. And the last thing they need to do is run around and unclog the toilet or do some paperwork down at the city or whatever it might be. And that's what we've been trying to build is a really easy solution for people to look at and say, I can partner with these guys, buy some assets, turn them over, have them managed, and it can be truly what everyone likes to say, mailbox money, right? I have money flowing in. I'm paying down a mortgage on a property that over the long haul is going to be fantastic for me and the family, and I don't have to do all the work. And it truly becomes passive income. It truly becomes something that's scalable. And that's the importance of finding a good, building a good team, right? Same thing with growing a business is the same thing with growing your rental business. It's finding that right team to put in place to make it easy.
Yeah. I always preach, having the right teams in place, and a property management company for me, is a very crucial part of a team. All my apartment buildings that I own, have third party property management, and they're a critical factor of my success. I wouldn't be successful without a solid property management company.
Right. So,
I think you're hitting it right on. You need to have a team. You can't just do everything yourself, especially if you got a full-time job and other things to do. And you,
right. Right.
You don't want to deal with the three T's that everybody gets scared about, the tenants, toilets, and trash.
That's right.
You guys will do that for them.
Yes, that's right. We have a team that loves doing that stuff. So
yeah. Well, let's talk about a success story. What's something that you're proud of your business?
Yeah, I think there's We've obviously had a lot of great success stories over the years attributed to what the team's done here at Renter's Warehouse. But as I was thinking about coming on your show today and trying to add some value to the listeners a little bit, you know, what can we talk about? I think it's something we've done more recently. We just spent 5 minutes talking about the retail part of our business. What we call retail are those that own, you know, 1 to 10 properties, kind of smaller investors, mom and pop, so to speak. But there's also becoming a larger and larger opportunity for us as a business to pursue those that have hundreds or thousands of properties, right? The institutional side investors. A lot of those guys are the really, really big ones that we've all heard about that are in the papers, from Blackstone and Invitation Homes, Colony America, and public companies. They manage internally. They've built their own management teams and systems. But there's a lot of mid-tier investors who have it. They own a couple hundred to a couple thousand homes, and they need a great property manager. Oftentimes, across multiple markets and multiple states, and rather than have to have several individual property managers, they'd love to have just one. So we went on about 18 months ago, maybe 20 months ago, and said, let's try and tackle this problem. We had now built quite a large corporate footprint across the country, which means we could deliver service in multiple cities and multiple states for these investors with one point of contact. So instead of having to call around to multiple offices and multiple property managers, multiple processes, they have one guy, right, or one girl. So we said, let's build this. We've got the infrastructure. Let's go and attack them. So I think the big kind of success piece of that is I didn't know necessarily how to manage at a quote-unquote an institutional level, from the different financial reporting they wanted, how to deal with some of the institutional loan platforms, different reporting, different. It's a different world. Yeah. And so we went out and recruited a guy from New York, of all places, and Wall Street, and former Goldman Sachs banker, and said, hey, come move from the finance side of this world to the operations side of this world and help us grow this department and this division of our business. And that's been really successful for us. Over the last 18 months, it's gone from being really not a part of our business at all to about 35% of our business today is on this institutional side, those that own, you know, quite a bit. It comes from a handful of clients that we've been successfully growing with across the country. And scaling with, and I think adding value to their business and running their portfolio more efficiently, allowing them to grow and expand, which of course allows us to grow and expand. So it's been a really nice synergistic relationship. It was kind of a leap in a new direction for us, but putting the right, again, goes back to those people in the process, putting that right person or recruiting the right person that had way more experience and knowledge than I did in running that type of investment into the business and getting their buy-in has been game-changing for us and really something we're proud of over the last probably year and a half or so.
I think that's a fantastic story, because it actually, nothing about the story but about what you did there is you took somebody, you weren't the smartest person in the room, and you realized that as CEO, and
Right. Went
and found somebody who was going to be the smartest person in the room and could actually do that part of your business successfully. So that's great. I think a lot of people struggle with that as business owners, is to step back and go, you know what? I might not be the best person for this job. I got to find somebody who's better than me.
Yeah.
Because we all want to think we're the best. Right? Yeah. So it's hard to sometimes go, I got to find somebody who's smarter than me and who gets it better than me.
Yeah. You know, I don't remember which mentor it was or who it was, you know, that said this or told me this. But what you say is so true, is our job as business owners or CEOs is frankly to work ourselves out of every job. Right. And we should be the dumbest person in the room at the end of the day when you assemble a great team, because otherwise what's the point. Right. So, you know, I take that seriously. And I think we've done that at every level of organization, hire people that are way smarter than I am, whether it comes to scaling a business across the country in operations role, to our institutional side of our business, to our marketing team and our sales team. And you know, that's what creates a scalable business. That's what creates something that's going to be successful for a long time. And frankly, it removes the bottlenecks. You know, that being said, I think as a leader, you have to continually develop and learn and grow. Otherwise, you're going to hold the business back. But there's no way ever that you could be the smartest person in every segment of your business, nor should you want to, right? It can be a lot easier on you if you hire smart people to go and do some of that work for you.
Yeah. I think it was Henry Ford, I think, and I'll botch exactly what was said, but they called him, you know, ignorant or stupid or something like that. And he looked at whoever he was talking to, and he said, look, in my office, I've got a row of buttons, and I can push any button, and I get the answer to any question that you'll ask me. He's got all these people, and he's got this teams, and, you know, he set it up right. So,
yeah, exactly.
Take it from people who are far more successful than us.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, now that we talked about a success, let's talk about a failure. What's the biggest failure that you think you've had, or maybe your company, and how did you learn and grow from it?
Yeah. Also, probably recently, right? We talked about a recent success. What's been a recent mistake, right? I think, God, there's too many mistakes to even talk about in a show that is 45 minutes or so. Of course, I think anyone who's intellectually honest will say that there's way more mistakes and failures than there are successes, but that's how we get to those successes, right? So I'm a big fan of failing fast. And failing quick, and sometimes failing in a big way, because those can lead to big successes. But a recent failure, I think, for our business was really kind of matched the last 18 months. We grew our institutional side of our business, which was we scaled our business faster than we could scale operationally, and which meant we had a very solid foundation of how we operate our business. But we went from, again, I mentioned early in the show, we went from one corporate location to 25 in 2 years. So not only are we growing the number of homes we manage dramatically, but we're growing our footprint. We're in new cities with new team members, still learning, still training. And then on top of that, we're piling on the business, right? And we're out selling like crazy. We've got a product and a service that I think is so different from others in the industry that we can sell all day long. We brought in so much business that, frankly, it just crushed our system and our ability to operate at a high level effectively, take good care of our clients. And it just, it was painful. And lesson learned from that was really, you know, what we now, one of our mantras in the business is what we call smart scale, right? It's one thing to just grow scale, but it's another thing to bring on scale in the business that's going to be sustainable in the long haul. And that's not going to crush the system. I mean, we stressed our system, our employees, our clients, our team this summer. It was brutal. We had to go through and essentially rebuild how we ran our company, because we got to kind of a new ceiling, right? I think anyone who's grown a business for a while knows that there's these points where you grow, hit a ceiling, and you got to crank through it and figure out how to change the business or pivot to get to the next level, And we hit one of those this summer. I think without recognizing it coming, and had to take a step back, slow down. We frankly stopped selling for a while, right? And said, let's kind of fix what we have. We were getting feedback from our clients that, you know, we were letting them down in different areas, whether it's just communication with them or taking care of an issue quick enough, answering our phones fast enough, real basic things. And that was tough. It was tough on the business. And we've really spent the last 8 months or so kind of coming back from that. We're in a great place today in the business, but it was certainly all hands on deck with how do we reevaluate how our team, how our teams are built, how they're set up, our organizational design, our process, and are the people in the right places and all that stuff. So we really kind of rebuilt things, brought in new technology, new process, and we're past it. But man, what do we learn from that is smart scale, putting some checks and balances in place. I mean, as entrepreneurs, as business leaders, CEOs, executives, we love to grow the business. It's exciting to scale. And in fact, we've passed on opportunities the last 3 or 4 months because we said, hey, we said we weren't going to do this, right? Whether it was that service line that we tried that just wasn't a good fit for us, or it was a client that didn't fit our profile just right yet. And we punted on those opportunities and said, hey, maybe later in the year. And that's painful. Turning down revenue is painful, right? But it's the right thing to do for the business. And that was definitely a key takeaway for us as an organization, was just kind of slowing down a little bit, making sure we had all the pieces in place before we bring on some of that larger business to do it. So,
Well, that's great, though. I mean, turning down revenue, like you said, is difficult. And
yeah,
when you know that could – that's money coming in,
right,
and that could help our business, but it also can hurt your business. So money coming in is not always a help. It can be a hindrance if it's
right,
not aligning with what you need. So
absolutely,
I think that's awesome that you guys were able to step back and stop selling. I mean, you've got this selling machine, and you said it was so easy to sell. Yeah. And you could just continue doing that and hopefully pound out the kinks along the way. But you guys said, nope, let's stop. We got to service our clients the right way, and we're going to focus on that. And then now I'm sure you guys are looking at expanding, but maybe in a more intelligent way.
Yeah. I think we can still rapidly grow, but it's important to put the pieces in the right order, right? Yeah. Make sure that you've got the key players, the key processes, the technology kind of all buttoned up. And yeah, growing a small business, as many of those listening and watching today, I'm sure, do or want to, you can never get it all done, it seems like, right? But we had to take a pause. We're getting to this scale where we really said, you know what, we need to button some of this stuff up and make sure we're in a good place so that the business is strong in the future. So we did that. We paused coming into 2018. We're really excited to continue to service our clients at a high level or even higher than we had in the past, but also be able to continue to scale the business. So
awesome. Awesome. So Kevin, take us through that mind shift. You know, you're doing the pilot thing, and then all of a sudden you got basically forced into, well, you started the business, but then you got forced to be serious about it.
Yeah.
But take us through that entrepreneurial mindset, and that, just that paradigm shift of where you're at today.
Yeah. It's a hard one for me to put a finger on kind of when that mind shift happened. I think looking back, as I reflect on things over the last couple of years, I think I've been an entrepreneur at heart probably since day one. And I never really knew where I got it from, because my father was a police officer. My mom stayed at home, worked sometimes, but did a great job taking care of the family. So I didn't really come up and it was entrepreneur. At least I didn't think so. Now, as I look back, actually, my father was a police officer by trade, but he built homes on the side. He had a home building company, built a dozen or so homes a year, opened and started and still owns a mini storage to this day. So he did have an entrepreneurial streak in him, but he also had a passion for police work and serving the community. So he wasn't really full time, right? On the entrepreneurial side, he was definitely more than full time, just putting in the hours every week. But as I look back at probably where I got the bug from, is I got to go to work with him and help him do things and grow his small businesses. And I think that's still kind of that work ethic and opportunity in me at an early age. And when I went off to college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to get into business or do something like that. Again, I ended up taking a different track, which was flying for a while, which was fantastic. But even then, still the entrepreneurial streak and the bug, and bought homes and started different businesses. I owned a flight school for a while. So I've just kind of always done these things. But I think what really sealed the deal for me was a story that I write about in my book, frankly, in the intro of the book, which was why I believe also in the security of real estate, is that whole experience of getting laid off from my corporate flying job, I think was a fundamental pivot in how I looked at things. And while I'd always been entrepreneurial or wanted to own a business and kind of really be in control, the things that led up to me being laid off were just incredible. So real quick, short story on that, I think helps paint the colors. I was living in Phoenix, but working at a company based out of Minneapolis when I was flying, and was commuting back and forth because I had just met my wife and we had just gotten married. And so weren't ready to move yet, so to speak. But the company said, you know what, we need you to move up here. We're going to change schedules. Can't be commuting anymore. So it was time to really make that full time. So just got married, just started a family, and said, okay, let's move up to Minneapolis for this. So we bought a house on a Wednesday. My wife had quit her job as a nurse, a job she loved, bought a house here in Minneapolis on Wednesday. And I went into work the next day on Thursday and got laid off, like literally the next day. So here I am, late 20s, newly married. We have our oldest daughter we have at the time. And my wife just quit her job. Mind you, it's the recession. real estate downturn. I own a house in Phoenix that I can't sell. That's worth less than half what I paid for it. And I just bought a new house in Minnesota and got laid off the next day. It was like, what the hell? Now, looking back, all of that was fantastic. It pushed me out to do my passion full time. Had a great flying job. It's not something you quit. It was a great lifestyle, all that kind of stuff. But it was a great nudge. It was a great push. And one of the best things that ever happened in my life. But at the time, talk about a total bummer, right? And I remember thinking that that was a time where I said, you know what? I'm never going to find myself in a situation again where someone controls that much of my destiny or my life or has that much control over what happens to me, right? Because that was just game changing. And so at that point it was, all right, time to grind, time to go to work. You know, let's grow this business and let's do our own thing and be in full control of what happens to me, myself and the family moving forward. So I think that was kind of the big shift for me. I've always had the bug, but you know what? Time to get serious about it was that time.
Kevin, that's one of the best stories I've ever heard. I can't believe that company told you to move back to Minneapolis and fired you.
I thought, come on, guys. Someone in upper management knew we were going bankrupt before today, right? They could have let me know. And they knew I was moving, but it all worked out.
Oh, well, but you put your head down. I can't stop laughing. That's hilarious. on your behalf, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, man. But you put your head down and you just said, you know what? I'm going to do this and I'm going to take control of my life. And so many other people would sit there in their dark hole and, you know, get depressed about it or just even just go and go, okay, I got to go get another job. But you said, you know what? I'm going to take this as a learning experience and I'm not going to let this happen to me again and my family. I'm going to take care of everything.
Yeah.
And that's just cool. That's awesome.
It was. And kudos to my wife for being down with it, so to speak, you know.
True. You got to have a great wife.
Get a job or do something, you know. But instead we got by and we figured it out and I never looked back.
Awesome. That's fantastic. What are three key factors for your success or your company's success, whatever you want to talk about there?
You know, I think we've talked a lot about the company and kind of things we do, I think, to be successful, some of my core beliefs on how to grow a business. We've talked a bit about that. But I think I mentioned a little bit ago as well that as a leader, as a business leader, we have to continue to grow and develop. Or we're going to get left behind, or we're going to be doing an organization of disservice. And I think if I had to think of three key factors for my personal success, you know, it's probably I have a huge passion for continual learning. Personal and professional development is huge. It's really part of my every day, my every week. And then discipline and consistency. Consistency changed my world when I really got a hold of what that really meant. Right. You hear people talk about it. But until you really think about what that means and how you can do a lot of small things consistently on an everyday basis and how that can be game changing in the long run, it's big. And I think that's where the discipline comes in. Right. So if I again, those three factors for me are probably discipline, consistency and continual learning and self-improvement. You nail those factors. I think you can crush anything. You can take on anything. You can figure it out, learn your way through it. Or if nothing else, you have the power to keep going, right? And sometimes that's what you need is you just got to keep going.
Cool. Awesome. So last question before we wrap up, what's your definition of the secret of financial freedom?
I'm a little biased on this, right? I think financial freedom is a tough word or a tough concept, right? And I don't really like, I think, what those words have come to mean sometimes for general discussion, because all of a sudden financial freedom means you need to, you know, have $20 million in the bank, $10 million in the bank, and have a big house, all these kind of things. Oftentimes those people aren't necessarily financially free, right? I think everyone's got to have their own definition of success, their own version of what that looks like, whether it's success or financial freedom. And for me, financial freedom means the ability to do what you want when you want, right? I joke all the time with my wife that I can't wait to retire young. And she's like, you're crazy. You're never going to not work, right? I absolutely love working. I love building a business. I love what we do. And she's right. But again, my definition of retirement is different than most people's, right? My definition of retirement means I don't have to show up tomorrow if I don't want to, right? Because I've built myself a situation where I can take a day off or take a week off or take 3 months off if I want to, or work from wherever it is I want to work from, right? So for me, that's kind of what financial freedom is having the freedom to be able to work when I want, where I want. I think I'll work probably forever, full time, because I love what I do. I love growing businesses. I love helping other people, you know, realize their success and their dreams. But the way to do that, again, I'm a little biased, is obviously one, I think being a business owner, growing a business, starting an enterprise is the best way. I think the most surefire way to get there, showing your value inside of someone else's organization and working your way to the executive ranks is a good start. But you need to create, I think, that long-term residual income and money that's going to come in forever. And my choice investment, of course, is real estate. And I say that obviously because I have a business that manages real estate, but I also truly believe in it and have owned property much longer than I've been involved in this business. And because at an early age, I said, this is a great way for me to create that financial freedom for myself, because Social Security is not going to be there for guys our age. And pensions are no longer around. So we're going to have to do it ourselves. How do we do it? I think it's buying these assets that have an underlying value, that we have someone else paying off our mortgage for us. We're getting tax breaks on our income, all the whole kit and caboodle. It's fantastic. And at the end of the day, when it comes time to slow down a little bit in life, having those properties paid off, yet having money coming into the bank account every month, it's like an annuity, but it actually has something you can sell off if you need to as well. So real estate's what gets me there to that financial freedom. But for me, I think to get back through to your question, that financial freedom for me is just having the ability to do what I want, when I want, work when I want, spend time with my family, however I want to, and not having to worry about the financial resource to be able to do so, or the stability of my family through all that.
Cool. What the name of your book was?
Rent to State Revolution.
Rent to State Revolution. Yeah. Okay. So besides your book,
yeah,
what's your favorite book to read?
Okay.
What's a book you're reading right now you're really enjoying?
So two answers to that question. One, one of my favorite books of all time is The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. That was the book that really got me to look at consistency a different way, right? If you haven't read The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy, absolutely have to pick it up and read it. It's a quick read, but it's game-changing as far as I'm concerned. So that's my all-time favorite book. A book I'm reading now that I love, which is becoming, moving its way up the ranks of great books for me, is called The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. He was a tech CEO through the dot-com burst in the late 90s. Had just started his company. It takes him through his trials and tribulations. An amazing story, a success story coming out of the dot-com burst. But then it was really his lessons learned running and growing a business and being a CEO of an organization. And I like his take on it. It's called The Hard Things About Hard Things because it, rather than the typical business book of here's how you do these things and here's how wonderful your business is going to be, he talks about what to do when crap hits the fan, so to speak, right? And so it's a very different take, but a real, real take on it, and really awesome. So I'd say that's my favorite current book I'm reading, and then obviously The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy definitely goes down in the all-time.
Well, Kevin, I appreciate you being on the show. I've had a lot of fun. What, you know, people are going to want to get in touch with Renter's Warehouse.
Yeah.
And get in touch with you. How do we get in touch with the Renter's Warehouse and get in touch?
Sure. Easiest way probably is the old internet there. So renterswarehouse.com, renters with an S, renterswarehouse.com will take you to the website. There you can find all the phone numbers for our local offices, our 1-800 number, you know, call us and get in touch with us. Easiest, best way to find me is on LinkedIn. Not huge social media guy right now, but on LinkedIn all the time. So you can find me there, Kevin Ortner. And then, of course, the book as well. You can find it on our website. Also, we have a website for that, rentestaterevolution.com, or you can buy it on Amazon as well. We appreciate support of the book. And that's how you can find us.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, Kevin. Well, you have a fantastic rest of the day, and thanks for sharing your stories and what you've been doing.
All right. You too, Todd. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right. That was awesome. I appreciate Kevin Ortner joining us on this podcast. It was a lot of fun talking with a high-achieving CEO of a pretty big company, Renters Warehouse, and they've got a great little niche there. There's a lot of other property management companies that are in the single family, small kind of rental space, but nothing quite like Renters Warehouse, where they have really taken it to a different level than any other company that I'm aware of at all. So it was great to talk to Kevin about what they got going on and what he's been able to do and what his company has been able to do. So appreciate that. So three things that I took from Kevin from the show. First of all, he talked about making sure you have a vision as a CEO, as the leader of the company, making sure you have a vision for your company and where it's going, but then making sure that you're always being able to cascade that vision onto your team. Make sure your team understands where your vision is and what you're trying to achieve and how you're trying to grow. The other thing I took from him is continue to grow. Continue to always grow and learn new things and grow to be able to serve your clients better and to be able to grow that business to the next level. So then the last thing is just that consistency, always being consistent. And as an entrepreneur, you're going to fall down. Like Mike Tyson said, you always everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And as an entrepreneur, you're going to get punched in the face a lot. And being consistent is really going to be one of the major ways for you to get through those hard times, for you to get through those hurdles. So make sure you're always consistent with what you're doing and persistent as well. So three great things from Kevin that I took from the show, lots of other valuable advice from him. So again, appreciate him being on this show. So for you, I'd love for all the listeners, if you haven't done so already, and if you have done so, I definitely really appreciate it. But go on to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating review. We'd love to have more ratings and reviews on there. And that helps us grow our brand and get the word out there to more people. And if you haven't subscribed, also subscribe. We'd love to have you as a subscriber. So go on to iTunes if you can and take care of that. I would be very, very happy. And I try to read reviews on our Hump Day Hustle, our Wednesday episode. So if you give us a review, I'll try to read some of those reviews and shout out to you for that. That is it. I am Todd Dexheimer, and I am signing off. Make every day a Saturday, and I will talk to you soon. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. view easy to understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.